when you cover up a crime, you're aiding and abetting that crime. And people have grudgingly come to the realization that our government is aiding and abetting child trafficking, which it is, which it has.
You're listening to The Corbett Report.
Welcome back, friends. Welcome back to The Corbett Report. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, coming to you in July of 2025, of course, in the wake of the release of the new FBI-DOJ memo on the Epstein case, which you all know about by now because I've covered it in New World Next Week. But in order to talk in more depth about this, I thought, why not get on the man who will have some interesting things to say about this. You know him by now. He's Nick Bryant. You will recognize him from our previous conversations, but hopefully you will recognize him as the man who is not only the author of such books as The Franklin Scandal, but was also the person who released the Black Book, Epstein's Black Book, in 2015. He is, of course, also at EpsteinJustice.com, where he is an activist raising awareness of the issues of child trafficking, of achieving justice for the victims of Epstein. So I hope you will acquaint yourself with his work and go to EpsteinJustice.com for more information about that work. But let's bring him on. Nick Bryant, thank you very much for joining us today.
Good to be with you, James.
Let's talk about some recent developments. I don't know if you've seen, but there's some interesting things going on in the Epstein case lately. Oh, I'm sure you have seen. So tell us your thoughts on this latest DOJ
pronouncement. I've heard about some things going on in the Epstein case.
Hmm.
Some minor things. Well, on Sunday night, instead of Monday morning, a memo was released by the Department of Justice and also by the FBI, but no one signed it. No one was willing to sign that memo. Not the president, not the attorney general, not the FBI director. And that memo said essentially that Epstein killed himself, and they provided footage that was kind of meaningless. And if the Department of Justice had had this footage when Epstein killed himself in 2019, I'm sure they would have used it because they took a tremendous amount of heat for allowing Epstein to hang himself. And I've been told by people that have been incarcerated at the Metropolitan Community Correctional Center that it would be almost impossible for someone to kill themselves, especially if they're on suicide watch. But anyway, and then there was a minute edited out of the video. So you could slip into someone's cell in 30 seconds and I think, you know, eventually slip out and have a nice edit. And so that's problematic. But the most problematic part of that memo is that Jeffrey Epstein wasn't pandering girls to any of his big shot, powerful, affluent cronies, and also that he didn't engage in blackmail. The only honest thing in that memo is, the only honest thing is that Jeffrey Epstein had more than 1,000 victims. That is the sum total of Veritas in that document.
That is an important point, because I believe back in 2019, they were talking about dozens of victims. But yes, in this memo, they talk about 1,000 plus victims. That is some sort of progress, I guess, at least in talking about the scope of this case. But obviously, as you say, it's in the service of sweeping it under the rug. And I'm sure you've seen by now, Dershowitz, for example, came out and said he knows that they have these documents that they are covering up in order to protect certain names, and he knows what the names are. Any thoughts on Dershowitz's pronouncements?
Well, if Alan Dershowitz says it, it's got to be true, right? Kind of like the New York Times. It just has to be true. It's kind of interesting that he would say that, considering that he's been heavily implicated. Virginia Giuffre named him as a perpetrator, and eventually, they got into a lawsuit, and she eventually said that she could have made a mistake. And given what her domestic situation was like at that point, it would have been quite easy to leverage her. I think it would have been quite easy to leverage her for various things, although I think that she was, for the most part, honest, and her testimony stood up against Ghislaine Maxwell and also Prince Andrew. And when it came out in 2015 that Virginia Giuffre had said that Alan Dershowitz was a perpetrator. Alan Dershowitz took to the airwaves, and he was talking to everybody. He was talking to big, small, big podcasts, small podcasts, big platforms, small platforms, mainstream media networks. And he was saying, I only fly with my wife. Actually, he said that in Law 360 article, that I only fly with my wife. That's the only person I ever fly with. Well, shortly after that, we put the flight logs up on the internet. And guess what? Alan was flying with girls like Tatiana and Claire. And Alan's mind, which we suspect, or which you've always been told is like a steel trap mind, he became a little rusty in that article that I wrote where he was interviewed. He didn't quite remember who Tatiana was, and he didn't quite remember who Claire was. And then another woman was brought up, and then he decided to diffuse the situation with humor. He said, that could have been my mother. So Alan wasn't very veritable about him on Epstein's plane. And what Dershowitz did to the victims is a huge disservice. And Dershowitz, I understand that defense attorneys have to represent rapists and murderers. I mean, that's what they sign up for if they're defense attorneys. But that seems to be his specialty, is defending rapists. And he also believes that the age of consent should be 14, regardless of the age of the other person. So I think for Alan to come out and say that is kind of interesting. I actually don't know what to make of it.
It is at the very least interesting that he says he waives all his rights to privacy. He wants every single document to be released fully unredacted because he believes it will be exculpatory. So at least in that regard, I agree with him. I would like to see every single document released completely unredacted. All of the tens of thousands of files that were sitting on Bondi's desk that suddenly don't exist, or whatever the case they're trying to make here is.
What happened, Bondi got herself into trouble very early on when she said that the files were on her desk and that they needed to be looked through. And then she said that there was a truck full of material. Now, I believe the feds are saying 300 gigabytes. But here's the problem with that cover story. Actually, there's a few problems with Bondi's cover story. The day after Jeffrey Epstein was arrested in 2019, the FBI saw his safe open the next day. And his safe wasn't the kind of safe that one thinks of. I mean, his safe was the size of a closet. And according to the New York Times, there were many disks that were taken out that contained child abuse material. And Business Insider reported that there were two hard drives that were taken out that contained child abuse material. The New York Times said hundreds, if not thousands, of images of child abuse material were taken out of that safe. Now, the FBI and the dark, malignant corner of intelligence that actually deploys people like Jeffrey Epstein, they were going through that safe that day and the next day, and they probably didn't even sleep until they had gone through everything in that safe. So Bondi is telling us initially that they've got to go through that all that child abuse material and the 300 gigabytes. They'd already gone through it 6 years earlier. I mean, that was a complete fabrication. And then she dug herself in a deeper hole when she said that she wouldn't release files that had any kind of bearing on national security. Now she has to tell us what a bunch of child molesters have to do with national security. And she never got into that. And then Kash Patel then came out and demoted all that to fiction. I mean, he demoted everything to fiction. And that was the party line that they went with. And Pam Bondi, I don't know. You know, I've talked about this to various people. Why did Pam Bondi say that she was going to release the Epstein files or Epstein list? I mean, she called it Epstein list, Epstein files. Why would she say that and then release a nothing sandwich? We've talked about this. I released more incriminating information on Epstein in 2015 than the DOJ did in 2025. And the only thing that I can think of is they did not understand the public's knowledge of the Epstein case. I believe that they thought that they could just release these heavily redacted documents. When I released the Black Book, if someone was not a victim, we redacted their number. We didn't redact their first name. We didn't redact their last name. We redacted their number. And there's over 100 victims in the Black Book, too. And we redacted their last name and their numbers. But I saw, when I saw a copy of the Black Book that I'd put up 10 years early, every name was redacted. So, you know, I mean, how can we begin to take that seriously? And then the national security came in. So she was just digging herself a deeper hole and a deeper hole and a deeper hole. And then Kash Patel came out and said, it's all a fiction. And then now we've got this strange document from the Department of Justice and the FBI that no one will put their name on. It's kind of from some Kafka-esque bureaucracy. It talks about analysts and people like that. And it said that although there was thousands of hours of child abuse material, that it was Epstein was the only one that was partaking of it, that there wasn't children being molested, and it was just thousands of hours of Jeffrey Epstein watching child pornography.
I believe, at least that what I picked up on in the press conference or the interview that Bondi was doing was that she said it was stuff that he had downloaded, as if it wasn't even anything that he himself had recorded. He had simply just downloaded it from the internet or something like that. That was at least the impression that she was trying to give, which is just, it's ludicrous. Absolutely.
And that's
ludicrous.
And that's what they're saying in the memo, too, is that he downloaded it. But I have talked to Epstein victims that have said that they were used for child abuse material as underage. And Virginia Giuffre, you know, God rest her soul, I've talked about the Black Book coming out and Alfredo Rodriguez, Epstein's house manager, circling people that were in cahoots with Epstein as far as his pedophilic enterprise. And he circled a number of names. And then Giuffre, in her lawsuit against Maxwell, named a number of people. Now, Rodriguez circled Ghislaine Maxwell. And Virginia Giuffre said she was molested by Ghislaine Maxwell. Rodriguez circled Les Wexner, and Virginia Giuffre said she was molested by Les Wexner. Rodriguez circled former New Mexico Governor William Richardson, who was also Clinton's energy czar, and Virginia Giuffre said that she was molested by him. And Rodriguez circled Ehud Barak, the former Israeli prime minister, and Virginia said that she'd been molested by him and that he was not a very nice guy. And then, of course, Alan Dershowitz was circled and she was named by Giuffre. And Jean-Luc Brunel, who ran a modeling agency with Epstein, who has been notorious. Actually, there was a 60 Minutes piece on him some years ago about he liked to roofie adolescent models and molest them. That was he was kind of into the Bill Cosby kink. And his name is circled, and Giuffre named him as a perpetrator. So we are able to get some double corroboration. And the best thing that you can say to a survivor is, I believe you. That is the best thing. You can give them empathy and sympathy and compassion, but the best thing that you can say to them is, I believe you. The worst thing you can say to them is, I don't believe you. So we have girls like Virginia who have been trafficked, and according to a newspaper report out of Australia talking about the Virgin Islands, they were as young as 11 or 12, and then Virginia said that she had met some girls that were 12, and I've come across some therapists, and ones I think I've told you, a very eminent psychologist, and Both these therapists are solid, and they were counseling victims, young women who they felt had been trafficked by Epstein. And this eminent psychologist, her client was able to describe Epstein's home and inside his New York home and the places around it. And she was under 10 when she was trafficked by Epstein. And this other therapist I know has a client that was under 10 when this therapist believed she was trafficked by Epstein. So these young girls, and you can be sexually assaulted once, and that can really destroy your life. And you've got these young girls who've been repeatedly molested by all these Epstein perpetrators, and the government is saying to all of them, we don't believe you. Even though there's substantial evidence to show that they were molested. And we've talked about the Epstein Victims Compensation Program, where there was a chunk of Epstein's estate that was set aside, and women could sue the estate and get compensation. And 225 women sued the estate. 150 settlements were awarded, and 12 settlements were declined. And the reason why these Epstein victims declined that money was because if you took that money, you had to sign an NDA saying that you wouldn't accuse any more of your perpetrators, that you'd go quiet about the rest of your perpetrators. So that Epstein Victims Compensation Program, and it was overseen by David Boies, who's really a dirty lawyer. And so basically what it's saying is that if you get money from us, we're going to shut you up in a way that the government can't. But when we get into over 1,000 victims, and that's reasonable because Epstein trafficked underage girls for 25 years, what about those hundreds of victims? The reason why those hundreds of victims didn't come forward is because they were terrified to go up against Epstein and the machinery that protected Epstein. That's why only 225 women wanted compensation or sued Epstein's estate, is because the rest were terrified of Epstein. And traffickers are very good at that. And if you're Epstein and you're hanging out with Bill Clinton and all kinds of other powerful people, and you just look upon yourself as, you know, a victim, and victims don't have very high self-esteem. I mean, that's just, if you're sexually abused, you don't have high self-esteem. And so between their low self-esteem and their complete terror of their perpetrators, they didn't even try to get a settlement from the Epstein Victims Compensation Program.
It is, I mean, in a sense, they had very good reason to be terrified of Epstein and his connections, because, as has been shown, there was no justice that would be forthcoming. They stepped forward. A lot of these young women put their reputations on the line, their lives on the line, put their trauma out in the public, and they have been utterly and totally, completely stepped on and used and discarded. Not only by Epstein and the perpetrators, but now by the DOJ, that's basically given the complete clear plate. There was nothing to see, nothing to prosecute. It's like traumatizing them all over again.
It is traumatizing them all over again. Yeah. I mean, they're getting raped again, sexually assaulted again. And the thing about it is, and we've talked about this before, the thing about it is, if the government wanted to get indictments, they could get indictments tomorrow. There was a New York Times article a couple of months after Epstein killed himself, and it named Ghislaine Maxwell, Sarah Kellen, Leslie Groff, Adriana Ross, Nadia Marcinkova, and Haley Robson of being procurers, a.k.a. pimps. These women were pimps. Ghislaine Maxwell, definitely a pimp. But if the Justice Department really wanted justice in this case, the case with Ghislaine Maxwell has already been adjudicated, but get Kellen, Groff, Ross and Marcin Kohler. I don't think Haley Robson knew much. She was just she was used to get high school students. I don't think she knew about the wider network. But Kellen Groff, Ross, and Marcin Kohler definitely knew about the wider network, and charged them with multiple counts of child trafficking, which wouldn't be difficult because the Department of Justice would not have problems finding victims that they had helped traffic, and indict them on 10 counts of child trafficking, or 5 counts, or 3 counts, whatever. Make them look at a couple life sentences in prison, and they're going to roll over on those perps. And all is the Department of Justice would have to do is read that New York Times article, and that would be enough to call a grand jury and get those women indicted. And that's really another tragedy. So the New York Times calls these women pimps. The Department of Justice calls Ghislaine Maxwell a pimp, and then Epstein is acting alone? I mean, it's so absurd. The difference between truth and fiction is that fiction needs to make sense. And this absolutely makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, it really doesn't. It's so utterly, blatantly in your face a lie, and everyone knows it. Everyone knows they are being lied to, which is makes it even that much more galling. I guess the real question, I mean, we can talk about all of this till the cows come home, and I have lots of things to say about this. For example, I think the missing minute of footage may in and of itself be a red herring, because people tend to think that that video is actually showing the door to Epstein's cell. It is not. It is showing a sliver in far in the background that is one of the entranceways up to the wing in which Epstein was being held. And all of this just nonsense and confusion and people still demanding the list, as we've talked about before, as if there is a single list. If there is a list, it was the Black Book, something along those lines, right? But again, we can talk about all the details of this. The really important question is, what are the next steps for Epstein justice? Now that this has happened,
well, we've been getting contact all day, and you're my third podcast I'm doing today, and I'm going to do a couple of podcasts tomorrow. And actually, I'm going to present a PowerPoint to a group of anti-trafficking organizations that have done very little about Jeffrey Epstein. I think there was a lobbyist that was helping Epstein justice, and we went to a couple of Republican senators who had been quite vociferous about Epstein. And Pam Bondi had told them that they will get evidence, that they're going to get evidence and people are going to be indicted. So it's going to be interesting when we go back to those senators. And I think a lot of these anti-trafficking organizations wanted to give the government the benefit of the doubt. But after my call today with one of those anti-trafficking organizations, that's gone out the window at this point. So, and you know, and I really hate to say this. I mean, I really do. But the government's just mind-boggling malfeasance has been a good thing for my organization, Epstein Justice. I really wish, I'm not a crusader. I'm a writer, you know. I've been a professional writer for 35 years, and I like writing, but there was a protest during the Ghislaine Maxwell trial that I put together. I'd never put together a protest. I'd never done anything like that before. But if I didn't do it, nobody else was going to do it. And I saw this with Epstein Justice. I did not want to do this. I just wanted to go about my life as a writer. And, you know, I had a nascent podcast that was doing good. I mean, but if there's isn't going to be an Epstein justice, there's going to be no blowback whatsoever against the government. And judging by the number of people that have emailed Epstein justice today, I think people are just really furious, really furious. And it's been people on the right that are much more furious than people on the left. I think that this issue appeals to more people on the right. Unfortunately, it should appeal to both sides. But the people on the right really felt that the triumvirate of Pam Bondi and Cash Patel and Dan Bongino were going to get to the bottom of this. They really did. They believed. They were believers. And now it's just a fairy tale, what the government came out. And as I said earlier, which even makes this document more mind-boggling, is no one had the courage to put their name on that document. Not even Trump was willing to put his name on that document. So plausible deniability in the years to come about that document is going to be very big. Bonnie's going to say, I didn't do it. Cash Patel is going to say, I didn't do it. Donald Trump is probably going to say, the Department of Justice did that. I don't know. Or Dan Bongino is going to say, well, I think it was Cash Patel who did it. Because there's no name on it, there's just plausible deniability, but that just shows more malfeasance in this case. This case has started in 2005, and when the first girl who was 14 years old told her stepmother, and they went to the Palm Beach Police Department. And what's really troubling about this, and we saw this in the Franklin scandal too, with the exception of the Palm Beach Police Department, every other state and federal agency betrayed these young girls. And the only reason why the Palm Beach Police Department really pushed it was Michael Ryder, the chief of the police department. And he took unbelievable heat for keeping going. I mean, a lot of intimidation, a lot of threats. But he did the right thing. I mean, people, they just have to do their job. He did his job. And when he saw that that grand jury didn't indict Jeffrey Epstein on a single count of child abuse, when the Palm Beach Police Department knew of 23 victims, he went to the Department of Justice thinking that they would do their job, and they didn't do their job. So at this point, and we saw it with the Franklin scandal, the only government entity that did its job was the Senate subcommittee for the Nebraska legislature that investigated the Franklin scandal. And both with that Senate subcommittee and both with the Palm Beach Police Department, they were just rolled over by federal power. Federal power was a steamroller that just flattened them, that they had no chance against. And it's up to the people. When I wrote the Franklin scandal and it was published, I thought that people would listen to me. I spent 7 years on it, and the last 100 pages of the book is documents. I said to the publisher, I said, we got to put these documents in because no one is going to believe these documents exist. I'm going to quote these documents, and no one's going to believe they exist. We need to put a bunch of these documents in their entirety, which we did. And I thought that would stir some outrage, but people just didn't want to believe it. And again, the media is very guilty with Epstein and very guilty with the Franklin scandal. And I think I've told you before, when I was pitching the Franklin scandal, I was across a desk from either editors or publishers, and I could just see the wheels going around, and they would say to themselves, well, this is a really horrible story with all these children getting abused. We need to help Nick Bryant. Or door two, Nick Bryant's crazy and I'm just going to write him off, and then we're going to have a nice dinner with my family tonight. That's how that played out. And that was devastating to me. And that's why in 2012, I jumped on Epstein. I really thought, I did not think, I knew that something was fishy with Epstein. Once I got the Black Book in 2012, I knew that it was a network, and I knew about the island. I think I was the first journalist to really know about the network and the island. So with my knowledge of both Franklin and then Epstein, I was hoping that the government would do the right thing with Epstein. But with the Ghislaine Maxwell trial, I realized that it wasn't going to do that. And that's ultimately I put that first petition up, and there's a second petition now on change.org about we're demanding that Trump keep his promise about releasing the Epstein files. Not the Epstein list, but the Epstein files. Because there are files on Jeffrey Epstein. You can bet that there's, in the very least, a bunch of 302s on a number of that video footage. So we want that. And actually, this, we put that petition up a couple weeks ago, I think, and we've got like 13,000 signatures. So, and the last petition we put up, it took us quite some time to get 13,000 signatures. So we've got a sufficient amount of outrage. And people have realized now that our government, when you cover up a crime, you're aiding and abetting that crime. And people have grudgingly come to the realization that our government is aiding and abetting child trafficking, which it is, which it has.
Right. Nick, as you say, as you quite correctly point out, no one wanted this cover-up to happen, and no one wants the DOJ to be trying to sweep all of this under the rug. But as you say, it has motivated, and certainly, as you say, the true believers, the scales are falling from their eyes, and they are outraged, absolutely outraged about what is happening. So far be it for me to tell you, to give you marching orders, but I would say there are many, many people who are very, very interested in what they can do to help Epstein justice in general, as let alone EpsteinJustice.com. So we will direct people, obviously, to EpsteinJustice.com, where they can learn more about that petition, they can learn more about what's happening. Is there a list that people can sign up to that hopefully we can start getting real protests and some genuine heat on the real perpetrators, the co-accomplices now of Epstein in the government?
When I was on your show the last time, I said that we're having webinars now and we're giving people tools to protest. And those tools will continue. And then at a certain point, when we reach a critical mass of people, we will have protests. And there's 320 million Americans or so. I mean, if we can get a million Americans to hit the streets, it shouldn't. There was the Dutroux scandal in Belgium where that pedophile network was covered up. And you had hundreds of thousands of Belgians hit the streets. And I've always thought, you know, if Belgians can hit the streets because there's a cover up of a pedophile network, certainly Americans can. We've been heavily desensitized and we've been taught that we have no power and we really can't do much. I mean, that's why Trump was so seductive to a lot of people, is they thought that he was coming in from, that he was riding his white horse into Washington, D.C., and he was going to clean things up. But now we see that that is not the case, and it's really up to we the people at this point.
This is it. Well, I imagine people have never been more outraged about this issue than they are right now. And so I would say, let's strike while the iron is hot. This is a huge issue and obviously some bombshell developments that are going on. I know you will be continuing to cover this. And as you say, you're doing lots of press at the moment about this. So I'm sure people can follow you in your various outlets. Obviously, we will direct people to EpsteinJustice.com. Is there anywhere else you would recommend people go?
I've got books out, but I would much rather have people go to EpsteinJustice.com than to Amazon or any place where I'd sell my books. I do have a website, NickBryantNYC.com, and I've done a lot of blogging on Epstein. And the podcast that I had, we did a number of videos on Epstein. So there's a lot of really good information on Epstein that's out there that I've either written or made videos. And we really think now is the time. And I just want to emphasize why, one of the reasons why this is so important. Well, first of all, your government can't aid and abet child trafficking. I mean, that's just one thing that it can't do. I mean, we know that the CIA topples democratically elected presidents and installs dictators. We know stuff like that. But this is way different than propping up capitalistic corporations. This is a line that's been crossed in the sand that should have never been crossed. And our government has done it. And I can leave your audience with, and I might have said this to you before, but it's really important for me to say this. According to the Centers for Disease Control, 25% of underage girls and 5% of underage boys in the United States have been molested. So, and a lot of people think that that's slightly conservative for girls, and a lot of people think it's way conservative for boys. But if you just go with those CDC numbers, you've got over 50 million Americans that have been molested as minors. And according to the Department of Health and Human Services, 240,000 to 325,000 women and girls are sexually trafficked in the United States every year. And when you juxtapose those to the number of people that are actually charged with these crimes, that's where it gets mind-boggling. It's according to the 2023 Federal Human Trafficking Report, 664 people in the United States in 2023 were charged with trafficking. And there's millions of hours of child abuse material that infests the internet. And last year, there was 1,375 people that were charged with making or disseminating child abuse material. So we're not even tackling 1% of these perpetrators. I mean, we could go, if we go to the lowest number we can possibly go to on the Department of Health and Human Services, if we go with 240,000, and then only 664,000 are being charged with that offense. I mean, even with the lowest number, it's still mind-boggling. So there's a lot of talk about protecting our children, and that's just not the way it's playing out with these numbers. And what we're doing at Epstein Justice isn't going to be easy. But the labor rights movement wasn't easy. The civil rights movement wasn't easy. Women's rights wasn't easy. Gay rights wasn't easy. Children's rights to have a decent life and not be abused. We're not going to be able to cut out all the molestation, but we can certainly cut out a lot of it. And our society has to do that now, because if you have one thing to take out of society, if you took child sexual abuse out of society, the prisons would be almost vacant. The psychiatric hospitals would be almost vacant. So this one thing in our society, we really have to focus on it. It's dirty. A lot of prosecutors don't want to touch it, but this is something that we have to start doing. And Epstein Justice.
It absolutely is. Yes. Let's do this. Nick Bryant, EpsteinJustice.com is the place to go to learn more about what is going on. And Nick, I certainly hope that we'll be able to continue to do updates on this as things continue to develop. As I say, I'm sure a lot of people are interested in Epstein Justice at the moment. So I hope people will go there to find out more about what they can do to help contribute to this. But Nick, I think we'll leave it there for today. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you
for doing what you do.
And a red book arrived recently at my apartment. It was written by a guy named James Corbett. I think I'm going to check it out.
Please do. Let me know how it goes.
It looks like a good book. I was just paging through it. Looks like a good book.
Excellent. All right. Well, I think we'll leave it there for today, but thank you again for your
time. Have a good night. Thank you for having me on, James.